she's mentioned now a couple times so far since she's been here less than 24 hours is that she will get a new definition of rural.
The Secretary of Health and Human Services visits Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, longshoremen protest a cruise ship traveling through Southeast.
We will be taking this as far as we have to protect our U.S. longshore workers' rights.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
Alaska Business Monthly, providing a source for statewide in-depth business news on Twitter at AK Business Month or Facebook.
Kathleen Sebelius is the latest Obama administration official to visit Alaska this month. The Health and Human Services Secretary is touring the state this week at the invitation of Senator Mark Begich. At Providence Hospital in Anchorage this morning, Sebelius sat down with Alaskans who help provide medical care for the state's seniors. APRN's Annie Fight reports.
The roundtable event was focused on health care for seniors, but the conversation ended up covering many of the thorniest medical issues in the state. Top among those is the cost of health care. Pat Luby with AARP in Alaska brought up a recent statistic showing health care costs are 55% higher in Alaska than in Washington state. Secretary Sebelius agreed it's a problem.
I think we have to get a handle on what is that cost driver, because the gap is so substantial. But having said that, regardless of the gap between Washington State and Alaska, there's no question that health costs, as you know, have the underlying health costs, have greatly outpaced inflation.
Sebelius says her agency has been working to control costs in the Medicare system. She says Medicare spends more than $1 billion each day, and until recently, it had very limited tools for curbing fraud.
CMS, for the first time, was given a real directive and a whole real lot tools. Of new tools to go after fraud.
Those new tools include the same kind of thing credit card companies have done for years, tracking expenses that don't make sense and stopping payment on them. She says last year, the anti-fraud effort saved the agency almost $5 billion. Sebelius also says the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's health care reform law, includes an important provision that will help Medicare adopt innovative pilot programs that help save money.
What the new law says, which is very different, is not only test these strategies, accelerate the testing as quickly as possible, but if you find that they are successful, take them to scale. That's we right. don't have to go back for permission. We don't have to. Right. We can actually begin to deploy these methods across the country. So that's never been there before, and I think is a critical piece of the kind of delivery system changes.
Many provisions in the Affordable Care Act don't take effect until 2014, but are in the works now. States are beginning the process of setting up health care insurance exchanges that will help the uninsured find affordable plans. Alaska was one of only two states that did not accept $1 million in federal funding to begin designing an exchange. Governor Parnell is suing the federal government over the Affordable Care Act because he doesn't agree with the individual mandate provision in the law. Sebelius is meeting with Parnell during her visit. She's hoping to convince him the state has a lot of flexibility in setting up the exchange.
So I'm eager to hear what the governor finds as his challenges, how we can be helpful moving ahead. I know that the debate about whether Alaska will run their own exchange or, in fact, defer to us is still underway, and eager to just hear how he's approaching it. But I think affordable, available health care for all Alaskans is certainly a goal that I would share with the governor.
Governor Parnell did not respond to a request for comment. If Alaska doesn't set up its own insurance exchange, the federal government will take over the process. Secretary Sebelius is one of several Obama administration officials who have visited the state this month at the invitation of Senator Mark Begich. The senator says it's the best way for officials to really understand Alaska. He has a few things he hopes Secretary Sebelius takes away from this visit.
So understanding when we say rural, it means you can't drive to it. Some days you might not be able to fly to it, and there'll be isolated communities. The second thing is that she recognizes that our delivery of healthcare system here is more complex than any state because of our distance that we have to travel. But the third thing is, I think she'll walk away with some innovations that we're doing here, some ideas that we hope to expand and also share with the rest of the country.
Secretary Sebelius is visiting the Alaska Native Primary Care Center in Anchorage and is also flying to Fairbanks, Barrow, Tanana, and Anaktuvuk Pass. She's the former governor of a rural state, Kansas, but she says she's prepared to come away from her Alaska trip with a new definition of what the word rural means. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Officials are unsure about the source of contamination in the waters around downtown Kodiak. A diesel odor and sheen was noticed on the south end of Near Island over the weekend. The Harbormaster's office and the Coast Guard have been investigating. Harbormaster Marty Owen says he suspects the pollution is from a ship that may have pumped its bilge after the heavy rains on Saturday. Owen says he took investigators from the Marine Safety Detachment out yesterday to investigate after they surveyed the sheen from a top pillar mountain. They boarded two floating processors anchored offshore, but found them to be clean and not the likely source of the pollution. Lieutenant Matthew Zinn with the Coast Guard in Kodiak says the spill could be a couple hundred gallons in size. He says as of yet they've been unable to pinpoint a source of the pollution. Neither Zinn nor Owen have seen or heard reports of dead seabirds or marine mammals. A Fairbanks-based infantryman has been killed in an insurgent attack in Kandahar province in Afghanistan. The soldier has been identified as 23-year-old Specialist Douglas J. Green of Sterling, Virginia. Green was on foot patrol Sunday when a roadside bomb was triggered and he came under attack by small arms fire. Green was assigned to a unit that has lost two soldiers in the last week. This month, 66 U.S. service members were killed in Afghanistan. According to the Associated Press, that makes August the deadliest month in the nearly 10-year-old war. The number includes the 30 American troops killed on August 6th when insurgents shot down a Chinook helicopter. After a summer of eruptive activity, Mount Cleveland has finally calmed down some. Today, the Alaska Volcano Observatory downgraded its color code for the Aleutian Volcano from orange to yellow. AVO had detected a lava dome expanding in Cleveland's crater early this month, but that dome has not shown growth in the past 2 weeks. Cleveland has not released any ash clouds, and explosive activity has been limited. However, scientists warn that the volcano could start rumbling again at any time. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, cruise ships try out specialty voyages, celebrating everything from conservatives to vampires.
I could always ask Public Works to hang garlic off of all the street lamps, just so that people can feel safe.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
Officials with two small interior school districts are staying positive despite failing to make federally mandated adequate yearly progress on standardized tests. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Students returned to classes Monday in the Nenana City School District, while the kids in Fairbanks and other area districts around the interior are already into their second week now. That includes the Delta Greeley School District in the Delta Junction area. Superintendent Duncan Ware says he, like school officials statewide, have been reviewing district's AYP scores that were released August 12th. Ware says the scores reflect a glimpse into the district's instruction gained from 3 days of testing students in grades 3 through 10 earlier this year.
It's one of those things that's very typical of testing. It's a snapshot. It's that day, that time.
Eric Gebhardt, Nenana School's superintendent, says that's pretty much how he looks at the AYPs.
Say that on these 3 days, you know, we're going to judge your whole year's worth of work. You know, and you get sick, or you have a death in the family, or you just have a bad day.
But both Gebhardt and Ware agree that the tests are useful in showing some problems that need attention. For example, Ware cites Delta High School's failure to meet AYP because it fell short in two categories out of 31.
Met the criteria for making AYP across the board, except for language arts and mathematics for economically disadvantaged students. that at least narrows down our population that we now need to address. How do we make the educational process for these students more efficient and more effective?
The federal No Child Left Behind Act says schools that meet all of the 31 mandated targets have made adequate yearly progress. 4 out of 6 schools in the Delta Greeley District fell short of AYP, as did both of Nenana's schools, and most statewide. Just over 45% of Alaska's schools made AYP. State education officials say that's at least partly because the federal AYP standards were raised again last year, as happens every few years. Ware says AYP results can also obscure a school's real progress. For example, the Delta Cyber School, which provides online instruction to dozens of students statewide, failed to make AYP because district officials could only get 91.4% of the students around the state who are enrolled in the program to take the test on the appointed days. That fell short of the 95% required.
The entire school and the work they've done gets discounted because we couldn't get everyone to come in and test.
Gebhardt has similar stories to tell, like the one about a student in Cake, where he taught before coming to Nenana. The student was the best reader in the class, his teacher said, so it seemed very unusual when he tested very low in language skills. Gebhardt says he talked with the boy and found that he was just doodling on the test, as kids do sometimes.
Sat him down outside. I said, "No, did you try or did you just make Mark?" "Oh, I just made Mark."
Gebhardt said the next year the boy got serious and showed his real abilities.
1 year later, when he took the test, he came and found me, you know, and he said, "Mr. Gebhardt, I wanted to let you know I did my best."
Both Gebhardt and Ware say that's one of the advantages of teaching in a small district, getting to know the couple hundred students pretty well, which helps them to understand whether a kid is just having a bad day on the day of testing or whether she really gave it her best. Les Morse, Deputy Commissioner of the State Department of Education and Early Childhood Development, says in his experience, that's long been true of rural school administrators.
Well, I think what you see in the rural areas is that everyone from the superintendent oftentimes on down understands the kids, understands the issues, and knows we got to take a look at some other pieces of data.
In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce billed Superintendent Carol Como's Monday luncheon talk as the Anchorage School District, the year ahead. But in the questions that followed, it appeared most of Como's chamber audience were interested in the current budget. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Superintendent Como said she wanted to leave time for questions. As chamber chair and luncheon moderator Bill Evans indicated, that was a wise move.
We had the governor here laying out his whole state plan several weeks ago and didn't have this many questions.
One of the first questions reflected a common theme confronting the district in school board races, its annual budget process, and at district appearances before the Anchorage Assembly.
From what I understand, the budget for the school district has more than doubled in the past 10 years to over $800 million, but the student body has remained relatively stable for the past 8 years. And the graduation has stagnated at 50% for the past 10 years. Why is that?
First of all, the graduation rate has not stagnated for 50%, so I would hope that could be corrected. It's not true.
In her talk, Como had cited the latest adequate yearly progress report showing the district's 4-year graduation rate at 72% and the 5-year degree rate at 76%. As for rising costs,
we have added a number of schools to the district in the last 10 years. We've opened 2 high schools. We've added full-day kindergarten at 13 schools. We've added 6 charter schools in those 2 years. We've added elementary health and PE teachers to accommodate not only extra planning time for our elementary teachers, but also the whole physical fitness wellness policy.
She noted that the increased use of computers in the classroom had produced a need for more technical support staff. Other budget fatteners were also touched upon in her talk and subsequent questions.
Hospitals have wards and floors for specialties like maternity, surgery, ICU. Why wouldn't the Anchorage School District do the same with specialty schools to better meet the special needs of the students in the most economic means possible?
The state of Alaska has frowned upon isolated schools, if you will, but we do have the Whaley School for emotionally disturbed students who really need extensive support for their behavior issues.
The district placed its program for the deaf and hard of hearing into three schools, where Como said it's proven very successful for the students. And by that, the superintendent means all the students.
We have people with disabilities all throughout our community, and I think it helps to have our students going to school with them each and every day so that they can realize the diversity in our population.
The students with disabilities topic also brought up underfunded mandates by, for example, the federal government. Como noted when the federal government passed the disability requirements, it promised to cover 40% of school district costs. It has never paid more than 16%. Other factors impacting the school district budget include changing student demographics. Besides the 14% of district students who fall under special education, one in three students are classified as low income, often demanding extra educational support. Also, there are 94 different primary languages other than English spoken among district students, all of whom are expected to meet No Child Left Behind standards in language proficiency. Como also noted that the $830 million total budget actually represents four divisions, with the school board and administration only having much control over the general operating fund. The operating fund is $655 million, with about $100 million of that simply passed through funds from the state for retirement benefits. This is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. Pebblepartnership.com.
And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 200 held an informational picket at Marine Park in Juneau yesterday while the cruise ship Westerdam was anchored in Gastineau Channel. Union members say cruise lines have repeatedly broken the law by not calling a contract stevedore and company to perform dock work, such as tying up tender boats and loading cargo, when vessels are anchored offshore. Tenders are used to ferry passengers to and from shore and to load cargo when cruise ships anchor in port rather than tie up to a dock. Dennis Young is president of ILWU Local 200, Unit 16 in Juneau. He says the cruise lines have been using crew members from the ships, some of whom aren't U.S. citizens, to perform the longshore work. Young says the union is working with U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Alaska's congressional delegation to end the practice.
They can continue to stall, spit and sputter, but we will be taking this as far as we have to protect our U.S. longshore workers' rights.
Alaska Cruise Association President John Binkley says the cruise lines are complying with federal law by using U.S. citizens to perform the work.
Well, I'm certainly not an attorney, but I don't know of any federal law that requires you to use a specific union to do work.
Binkley says the longshoremen don't have a right to work under their contract.
My understanding is that through the collective bargaining process, they've agreed not to do the work on the tenders and smaller vessels, and that was bargained away for other wages or benefits over the years. And now I think they want to go outside the collective bargaining system to try and take over that work.
Young says that's simply not true.
They're picking and choosing how to follow the contract when they hire a stevedore and company to perform U.S. longshore work, and they're picking and choosing how they're going to follow the Immigration Act law.
The longshoremen plan a similar protest in Sitka today and Ketchikan at some point. Cruise ships have been visiting Alaska for decades, but they are not like they used to be. Tara Bicknell from member station KHNS reports from Skagway on an emerging trend in the industry.
Okay, I got one for you. What do vampires, Donald Duck, lesbians, and the Tea Party have in common? You give up? They all have theme cruises that dock in Skagway. Theme cruises are not just for rock and roll fans in the Caribbean anymore. They've been sailing up and down the Lynn Canal for years.
I mean, it used to be where cruise ships were just marketing, you know, themselves.
Just ask Skagway Tourism Director Buckwheat Donahue.
I mean, I could come up with an idea, and I could just call it the Skagwegian Cruise and get maybe 40 or 50 people that want to rent berths and go on a cruise down to the Caribbean or something like that.
We're talking about this because a cruise ship chartered by the Tea Party Express and the American Conservative Union departed Seattle on Saturday, bound for the gateway to the Klondike. And guess who's on board the second annual Conservative Political Action Committee's cruise? The president of the National Rifle Association, former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, author Alan Keyes, U.S. Justice Foundation's Gary Creep, former Saturday Night Live personality Victoria Jackson, Americans for Tax Reform President Grover Norquist, and conservative social issues crusader Ralph Reed. Next June, the Holland America's Zuiderdam arrives in Skagway, full of vampire enthusiasts. Yep, it's already booked.
Well, you know what? The hardware store's going to have to buy some of those Halloween teeth, you know, so people can walk around going, I'm going to suck the blood out of you.
Self-proclaimed fang bangers and other varieties of vampire wannabes sink their teeth into a week at sea on the cruise ship Convention for the Undead. It runs from Vancouver to Skagway, June 23rd to 30th, just a couple days after the summer solstice. Go figure.
Now, I could always ask Public Works to hang garlic off of all the street lamps, you know, just so that people can feel, you know, safe.
The whole themed cruise idea is just getting bigger. There are cruises for soap opera fans, chocolate lovers, calypso dancers, even scrapbookers. There are kosher Jewish music cruises, a Mac Mania cruise for Apple computer geeks, a Titanic memorial cruise that completes the Titanic's original itinerary. There's even one for fans of the movie A Christmas Story. Cruise Critic explains that theme cruises are an onboard creation by the cruise line, stuff like chocolate cruises and the NASCAR voyage. Special interest cruises are where a group purchases a number of staterooms, often with an itinerary and special guests. Full ship charters is where the entire ship is organized around the interest and everyone on board participates in activities. That would be the gay and lesbian cruises and poker cruises.
And I just had a very wonderful phone call this morning with the Grin and Barrett Marathon Running Club. And they called me and they are putting together a cruise package next year for marathoners. And they want to do the Skagway Marathon.
They already have 14 people signed up, he adds, saying the whole focus for this group would be getting to the Skagway Marathon and carbo loading at the endless buffet bar. Meanwhile, on board the Conservative cruise docking in Skagway midweek, the conversation is not all about whether to pan for gold or helicopter to dog camp when they get to Skagway. Washington Times blogger Emily Miller, who's sending updates from the boat, says they're talking about what everyone else is talking about back in D.C., which Republican they think is most seaworthy to withstand the perfect storm, the presidential race. Reporting in Skagway, I'm Tara Bicknell.
Another school year in Alaska means a new season of competition for high school athletes around the state. Many started coming into practice several weeks before the start of school. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein recently visited with several of Petersburg's teams and produced this audio postcard.
Bev Sirks, I'm the head volleyball coach, and we have a small group of girls this year. We actually only have 17 or 18 girls out at the present time. We haven't seen the entire starters or players back from last year's varsity all at the same practice yet because of fishing in and out. We still have some pretty tall, strong middles, and we're looking for a very good season.
My name is Carolyn Kermick, and I'm going to be a senior this year. And I'm looking forward to our team regrouping and coming together because we lost a lot of seniors. I'm really excited for it.
Have you been practicing a lot so far?
Well, I just came in from fishing, but we've been practicing a lot, especially on serve receive. That was one of our weaknesses last year, so hopefully we'll have that up and at them this year.
I'm Joanne Day, and I'm the cross-country coach here at the high school. We have about 20 runners this year.
when everybody gets back from working and fishing. It's a really young team, mostly sophomores and freshmen, but there's a lot of them, got a lot of speed and a lot of potential, and it's going to be a good year.
How long have you been practicing?
We started practice August 4th, so it's tough for the kids to think about school 3.5 weeks before it starts, but here we are.
My name is Nicole Peterson, and I'm going into 10th grade, and I'm looking forward to beating my my old scores from times in like Ketchikan and Juno, and beating other people from the past that I haven't beat yet.
I'm Andy Carlisle. I'm the swim coach in Petersburg.
What do you look particularly strong in this year in terms of events, do you think, at this so far? Or is it too early to say?
The boys were pretty strong all the way across the board. I don't know that we have a weak event. The girls were looking really good in the breaststroke, IM, and long free.
My name's Rhiannon Kivisto. I am a senior this year. And swimming, I think it's going to be a really good year. It's actually going to be a fun year because, you know, it's your last year in high school. You just want to make it fun.
Have you been swimming all summer or all to get ready for this, or are you just getting back into it now?
Well, this is preseason, so I think all of us are a little bit, you know, out of breath at practice right now.
My name is Joe Zarlingo, and I'm a senior this year on this high school swim team, and I'm really looking forward to the competition this year. We lost 2 senior swimmers last year, I believe, and it was a little bit of a power in our relay that we lost, but we got some good freshmen this year, so I'm really excited to see how our relays do.
That audio postcard was produced by Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Baird in Kodiak, Tim Ellis in Delta, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Tara Bicknell in Haines, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, and Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. The future of how Alaskans will produce the energy we need for our homes and businesses is uncertain. The Renewable Energy Alaska Project is committed to developing Alaska's vast renewable energy resources to create a clean, local, and sustainable energy supply. Learn more at realaska.org. This message sponsored by REAP, committed to creating a sustainable economic future for Alaska.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.